Good evening, everybody. My name is Edward Lucas, and I'm organised the debates for The Economist. It's a great pleasure to be back at LSE 20 years after I last spoke into a microphone here when I was a student. We've got a great audience tonight. I'm particularly glad we've got so many professional risk managers here. And in the best tradition of British risk management, I'd like just to alert you to the fire exits. If the fire alarm sounds, please make your way through the fire exits rather than trying to get out any other way. Please turn off your mobile phones so you can concentrate on the debate and other people won't be distracted. After the debate, there are going to be some drinks in the senior dining room, which is on the fifth floor of the old building, as LSE people here will know. If you don't know LSE, just follow the mob. With that, I'd like to hand over to Howard, who's going to chair the debate.
Thank you, Edward. And we're pleased, from the school's point of view, to have begun this partnership with The Economist, which arose from an original lunch that Edward and I had a few months ago. The subject tonight, Are Risk Managers Dangerous?, is one which is of interest to quite a number of the academic staff in the school, particularly in the Centre for the Analysis of Risk and Regulation, which is where Mike Power is from. And we have assembled an extremely strong panel, and we have ensured that they do take somewhat different views on this contested topic. In the world from which I escaped about 12 months ago, financial regulation, the question of riskiness of risk managers was becoming quite a current one, and I guess there were two propositions advanced. One was that risk managers could be dangerous in the sense that they might be preventing financial firms from taking risks and taking on risk, which, after all, is their prime economic rationale. And so that an excessive risk management could, in fact, be removing the sort of vitality of the financial sector and its usefulness in the economy. And a second, slightly different but similar argument in some ways, was that if risk managers all operated in the same way, you could get a kind of herd behavior developing in the financial sector as everybody started to look at risks similarly. And that is particularly an accusation sometimes leveled at the new Basel Accord, the framework within which banking supervisors and indeed banking risk managers will in future operate. So those arguments were becoming increasingly heard in the financial sector, and I think this in financial sector is a very lively debate at present. But we don't want to limit the discussion tonight purely to the finance sector, so we have someone from the oil industry and from Group Danone, a food manufacturer, the third largest European food manufacturer, I think.
Yeah.
But that may be after the collapse of Parmalat, is it?
No, it was before.
Right, before.
And we are still. We are still.
Yeah, we tried to get a risk manager from Parmalat, but I don't know why. We didn't.
Busy.
Didn't
busy.
Seem busy. Yeah. Now, before we launch, and I'm just going to sit back and get the four panel members to offer you their views, but I think it would be a good idea, and I recognise that this is in some ways a rather blunt question, are risk managers dangerous? But we would like to get a show of hands on a simple yes-no answer to that question at the beginning, and Bridget Hutter is now pondering how she's going to respond, and I'm going to insist there are no abstentions allowed. And then we will have a second vote of show of hands right at the end to see if anybody's change their minds after listening. The losers on the panel don't get a drink afterwards. So, first of all, then, who would answer yes to the question that risk managers are dangerous? I don't know if the stewards could actually... Can you count? What course are you on? If you're in economics, don't bother. But can you roughly count over there? I'll count up the top. One, two, three. I can only see four hands at the top. From there? Overall. Okay. And there are four at the top, so let's call it 25. Who don't think they're dangerous? Well, that's going to be about, what do you think, about 70? Something like that. And who have no idea what they think. That's it. Well, thank you. An honest man, at last. Okay, so at the moment, those who believe that risk managers are dangerous have an uphill struggle. But that's what Mike Powell likes. He likes uphill struggles, which is why he teaches here. And Mike, who is, of course, director of the Centre for the Analysis of Risk and Regulation here, and has been at the school for about 17 years now, is going to kick off an attempt, broadly speaking, to prove that most of you are wrong. Mike.
Okay, so the case for the prosecution of risk managers. I think if we stand back and think about it in the cold light of day, risk officers and risk managers have rarely been created for economic reasons. They're usually invented in the wake of crisis, and then other organizations, rather than thinking for themselves, think this is a good thing and go ahead and copy other organizations. These creation of risk managers over the past 10 years has largely been a legalistic response to problems, an attempt by companies to signal that they're serious about issues, but in fact a cosmetic organizational fix with very questionable substantive benefits. The risk officers I meet, who are all very nice people, say that they want to imbue risk thinking in the organization. But like the communist state, they will not wither away once they internalize risk in their organizations. They're a rising class with their own interests, and this is what makes them dangerous. They create appearances, not the substance, of security and manageability, and internally and externally, which may be very well unwarranted. They're part of a broader politics, and this is the essence of my prosecution, that we must look at them in a broader context. They're part of a broader context in this society of finding people to blame. The creation of risk managers is about blame shifting, and creation of officerships is, and the statutory role of those officerships is to reassure an unwitting public. They find their functionality very difficult to justify, and that's why these people are so busy in their organizations. They also cost a hell of a lot. They keep telling me, at least, that they add value to their organizations. One encounters constant rhetorics of making sure we do what we do already better. We like to support better decisions in our organizations. But for the vast underbelly of corporate life, these people function really as auditors, creating elaborate control systems with very indeterminate, intangible benefits. They're essentially bureaucrats and can't prove the success of their function. There's a certain narcissistic character of their interest in enterprise risk management, most recently. They simply impose their own model of the organization on others. And the rise of COSO and enterprise risk management, conjoined with the rise of chief risk officers, is the most dangerous development we now face. They completely overstate the win-win rhetorics that they establish internally on the basis of very little operational evidence. But this, of course, is part of their own survival as a class. There's completely equivocal evidence on whether risk managers add anything to shareholder value. The rise of risk managers, I maintain, ladies and gentlemen, is part of an explosion of non-jobs which exist largely to defend corporations. It's part of the way organizations do their cleaning up. Ethics officers, corporate governance officers, you can name your own versions of these non-jobs, which are all the rage. Risk managers are part of an industry which has grown to the point where it can no longer ask itself what it's for. It's self-sustaining. It's a new class, and to adapt a Chinese proverb, a society in decline has many risk managers. What about their claim to support entrepreneurship? Well, they play up their role in a new opportunity society, but they actually exist to propagate defensive mentalities. They make sure that health warnings exist, not so much to protect people, but to protect the firm. They're interested in processes for justification purposes, not efficiency. Their growth is part of what I call a defensive reputation management culture, a secondary risk management society. They started life, you must remember, ladies and gentlemen, as people who like to say no to things. they've not really changed. They have an overwhelming desire to have veto rights in the organizations in which they operate. And secretly, although they'll never go public on this, they like legislation. They like heavy legislation because this ensures a transfer of resources to their own departments. Monsters like Sarbanes-Oxley and Basel II, they secretly adore. This is all part of not taking responsibility. These people increasingly don't want to be risk managers. They talk about taking a high-level view and allowing risk to be managed elsewhere in the business. This, of course, is a cop-out, a complete fragmentation of auditors of responsibility in organizations. It's a bit like auditors constantly saying they don't do auditing anymore. It seems like today everyone is trying to do the job that they weren't employed for. Are they experts? Well, I would ask, where are these people came from? What qualifications and expertise do they really have? There are so many professional associations associated with risk management, it's difficult to know as a customer what you should choose. I might grudgingly accept that if you've done finance at the London School of Economics, that might qualify you to operate in the market risk and credit risk fields. But operational risk and more general risk management, give us a break. They're reaching beyond their existing skills base, creating disproportionate expectations of what they can deliver. And you know, we all know that they're not really respected in their own businesses. So they compromise their independence because they have this yearning to be loved by their business. They envy people who do strategy in their own organizations. It's a bit like physics envy for social scientists. They always want to be somewhere else other than managing risk. And does the public really have more trust in companies as a result of their work? I doubt it, and there's no evidence to suggest this. They're really part of the mania for formal control systems and more checking. As Howard said at the beginning, there's some evidence that risk managers collectively acting in similar ways can amplify and propagate crises themselves. This systematic counterproductivity is definitely dangerous. Well, that's the case for the prosecution, or one of them. Obviously, there are exceptions to some of my statements, although I doubt that. There are obviously some corporations who would claim that they are leaders in the field. Maybe risk managers are not public enemy number one, but certainly they are agents of what I regard as a new audit society, audit society in new clothing, and are definitely dangerous.
Thanks. Well, we should probably take votes in this debate every couple of minutes, but I don't think we will do that. Instead, we'll move on to our next contributor, who is Reg Hinckley, immediately on my left, who is Commercial Director of BP's Integrated Supply and Trading Operations, but before then was Vice President and General Auditor for the group, ensuring the company's commitment to the Turnbull Committee recommendations. And on Mike Power's definition, that sounds like the ultimate non-job. Reg and I go way back, as they say. We were in the Treasury together, though we both left the Treasury more than 20 years ago. So, Reg.
Yes, well, thank you very much. Thank you very much to The Economist and Carr for inviting me to speak here this evening. You know, I must admit, having heard Michael's proposition, I was wondering really whether I should leave quietly and allow the rest of you to do... pick over the bones, as it were. I mean, interestingly enough, listening to him, I mean, I am a former bureaucrat. I am a former auditor. I am responsible for a risk function. I mean, could I be more qualified? I don't know. But, you know, being a balanced sort of individual, I have to say that when I first heard about this motion, I did ask myself quite seriously, which side of the debate should I speak on? Because I'm not unaware of some of the issues in this area. I mean, all I can really offer at the end of the day is dare I say it, some sort of practical experience of risk management in what is, after all, a large corporation. And Michael's sort of made the case very strongly as to why risk managers might be dangerous, but I think his scenario is way, way too bleak and way, way too negative. I think if there's any industry at all where risk is present, it has to be the energy industry. And the risk envelope of that industry covers many different functions and many different professions. It It includes engineering, finding, developing and producing hydrocarbons, I mean, increasingly in difficult environments, and then transporting them safely to consumers, and we know all about transportation risks in this day and age. And it's got a commercial dimension, both in terms of negotiating contracts and also operating in commodity and financial markets, because you know, those markets play a major part in the supply of energy from the wellhead to end consumers. So, I mean, we are risk managers in the broad in our own right. We also are very much exposed to public accountability. We are a highly regulated industry in different ways, and there's always the ever-present media, including, of course, The Economist, who are there to scrutinize our activities and comment on us when we go wrong. So, I mean, it's a pretty risky business. But on the whole, I think if you think about it, and you think about it over, what, the 100 and some years of the industry, these are a set of activities that the industry has managed with a lot of skill. It hasn't always got it right. But you just think about getting that complexity of system working day in, day out to deliver energy in the volumes that it does. It's a pretty impressive enterprise. And to get there requires a lot of care. We've spent a lot of time looking at our management environment. And I have to say that risk management plays a critical part in that. It is not a bureaucracy. It is not a bunch of self-serving people sort of looking at risk and trying to invent all sorts of ways to create new processes. It's a very real part of the management environment, and it has impact in various dimensions. It has impact, for example, when we formulate strategy, specifically in disentangling those elements of strategy where we are really trying to leverage our skills and our capabilities versus those where we are going into new territory where we may need to create new capabilities, for example. And of course, the industry is always venturing into new territory. It's very critical in organizational design, and particularly in ensuring that people have very clear accountabilities for risk and the various risks to which we are exposed. And we have to have as much emphasis on organizational design as, shall we say, the financial services industry does. It's very important in setting and communicating performance goals. I mean, we all know the perils, you know, of too much performance stretch on the management environment, and we have to think quite carefully about the risks in that context too. And even the right at board level, the risk conversation is very important in shaping the board agenda and shaping the board governance process. So I would say that, you know, based on one's practical experience of an industry like that, the risk manager has a very valuable role to play. Now, can one then simply translate that logic into looking at the finance industry and some of the difficult areas that was referred to in this motion? Well, I think we can. I mean, some may disagree, but I do believe the risk manager in the financial services sector has contributed very positively to our understanding and indeed quantification of risk. And those techniques are having wider and wider application in management decision making. And that is a reality in our business. And even the much derided financial engineer with all their very elaborate products, nevertheless, has helped to allow the completion of markets and allow organizations like ours to do things powerfully, which was not possible in the past. Now, in order to manage these kind of financial risks, we have to create our own capabilities in that area. I mean, we are unavoidably participants in these markets. And we have to design our organization to high standards to ensure those risks don't materialize in an adverse way, as they have it done in some organizations. But I think increasingly leading players know what's best practice. So my contention is that the judicious use of risk management tools contribute to the optimization of energy supply chains to the ultimate benefit of consumers at large. And even the much derided Turnbull and Sarbanes-Oxley requirements, you know, have their value in stimulating the right kinds of board discussions. In some ways, this whole motion in this whole topic feels a little bit like, you know, the motor car 100 years ago. Yes, there are dangers from misuse. Yes, there are imposed social costs. But in the long run, there are real benefits too. And while it's not unreasonable to signal the hazards, you know, the risk manager with a waving a red flag or whatever it may be, I think it is ultimately through deepening our understanding of risk that we will help ensure that the overall equation is positive. Failures like Barings and Enron were ultimately failures of system. And I'm in no doubt that considered understanding of risks and a risk consciousness in organizations properly applied has real value. And it's that context, I think, the risk manager is not dangerous, but is making a valuable and very positive contribution. Thank you.
Thank you, Reg. Well, our third contributor, and the logic of the order will gradually be revealed to you. Roughly, we have another case for the prosecution coming up. And our third contributor is Avinash Persaud, who's investment director of GAM, a big investment house. But just as importantly, he is a governor of the LSE and has a high profile in the financial services industry, as I know occasionally to my cost, as a critic, but a very thoughtful critic of some of the regulatory developments in financial services in recent years. Before being at GAM, he was at State Street and J.P. Morgan, and there may be other firms from which he was fired too. But I'll hand over to Avinash.
Thank you very much, Howard. It's a provocative motion. Are risk managers dangerous? The problem is, and I say that as a non-exec director of the world's largest risk management organization, the Global Association of Risk Professionals, the problem is that there's more truth in this motion than there ought to be. Risk management is big business today, and it's a growth business. I'm going to focus on financial risk management because that's where I've had about 16 years of on-hands experience. But I think the points are quite general. The tipping point in finance came in 1993 with the adoption of the Market Risk Protocol by the Basel Committee. And since that time, risk management industry has grown rapidly in finance. It's now close to about $10 billion, the size of the industry. And regulatory costs have increased in tandem. Today, the cost of complying with regulation, financial regulation, is estimated to be about 5% of the costs for large banks, and as high as 50% for small IFAs. I know that because I am one. So what can we show for this last 10 years of greater focus and intensity on risk management, and far more expenditure on consultants and regulatory requirements? Is the financial system now much safer? And if so, for whom? Do you feel financially more secure? To answer that, we need a benchmark of success. In the risk management of banks, it's not have there ever been any failures. There were few failures in the Soviet banking system, but that didn't make it a success. Successful risk management means something more than the survival of the strongest, because they're going to survive anyway. Successful risk management is about where more risk than otherwise is taken by those who can naturally or easily offset that risk, absorb that risk, manage that risk. And less risk is taken than otherwise by those who are less suited to do so. That's not what we have today. Today, risks have been shuffled around so that well-capitalized financial institutions employing experts carry less risks. And individuals, people like you and I, liquidity and capital constrained most of the time, unversed in financial practice often, carry more risks. The consequence of safer banks has been bigger pension fund shortfalls. Is that right? Internationally, too, the system fails to provide sufficient long-term risk capital to small and medium enterprises and emerging economies. Current risk management practice rests on three mistaken principles. These are equality in the treatment of risks, wherever they are and whoever carries them, the quest for common standards amongst all risk managers, and increasing reliance on what is cutely called risk sensitivity, but actually means in the context using more market measures of risk. Now, arguing against these things sometimes makes me feel like I'm arguing against poetry, because they sound so right, they must be, but they're not. Let me take the equality of treatment fallacy first. Financial risk cannot be viewed as a static lump that can be chiseled away by the risk manager. It's a fluid. You tax risk in one place, and it will flow to another. Tax it in the other, in the name of equality of treatment in different sectors, and it will flow to someplace else. The logical conclusion of this chase for equality of risk treatment in different sectors is we end up with hugely onerous and expensive regulation and risk management everywhere, and we've pushed risk to where we can't see it or where we can't tax it. Is that the right place for risk? We're going to end up with a very heavy regulatory burden and substantial invisible risks. This has happened. In the name of risk management, risks have shifted from bank balance sheets through Basel to insurance and defined benefit pension schemes. And then through accounting and regulatory risk management, these risks have been shifted again to pensioners and policyholders, people like you and I. According to the Pensions Commission that came out the other day, active membership of defined benefit pension schemes has collapsed by 65% since 1995. Banks are safer, individuals are not. The second fallacy is the quest for common standards. This is great for the railways, lousy for finance. Financial market liquidity requires diversity. If I want to sell something, I have to find a buyer. Today, though, with CNBC and Bloomberg, we all now have the same information. Imagine that we also all have the same risk management approach. Then, irrespective of our different investment horizons and strategies, if my risk management system tells me to reduce my exposure to a country's currency because it's riskier, because it's losing money, then everybody else's risk management system will be telling them to do the same thing. When I want to sell, all I'm going to find are other sellers. If one financial institution uses a mark-to-market daily risk management system, which most people use, then that is great for everyone. If everyone uses the exact same risk management system, we will find financial chaos. We will find more frequent periods of illiquidity, what I call liquidity black holes. And this is happening. Despite the fact that markets are growing sharply in size, we've had a substantial increase and the number of mini-collapses. In the last 10 years, the number of 2% days in the equity market, when the equity market's gone up or down by 2%, a big move, was 194 days. In the decade previously, it was less than half of that. Markets are getting bigger and yet thinner. Why? Bigger, supposedly more liquid, and yet far more volatile. Now, the third fallacy, and last one, relates to what we've just said. Risk managers today optimize and draw risk-return frontiers. They use a lot of quantitative techniques, the kind that Reg just talked about. The problem is our risk-return frontiers are all very similar. Because as investors, we all use the same information, the same statistical techniques, the same investment universe, and we're told to do that by our risk managers. 70% of international equity and bond investors use near-identical investment benchmarks. Now, the problem is that we assume, as risk managers, when we're doing this, that we react to the optimal portfolio, but nobody else does. Modern risk management fails the Lucas critique. What actually happens is, as I adopt the optimal portfolio of high returns and low risk, so does everybody else. And that process changes the characteristic of the portfolio. What I thought was a high return and low risk portfolio suddenly becomes a low risk, a low return, high risk portfolio as the herd has moved into it. This has been flatteringly called the Persaud paradox at times. What it basically is, the result of the increasing use of common market-sensitive risk management systems means that the observation of a safe area of financial markets makes it riskier as the herd flows there. And the observation of a risky area of financial markets makes it safer as investors depart, leaving little firewood for future contagion. Risk managers contributed to the wildfire of the Asian financial crisis, which engulfed markets that were previously considered by these risk managers as safe. Let me end by saying, the current practice of risk management, not the number of risk managers we have, but the current practice of risk management is dangerous. It is dangerous because in a triumph of the lawyers and the statisticians over economists, it assumes away three fundamental aspects of risk and its measurement. Risk is a fluid. You cannot ban it from everywhere. The best risk management is first to decide where do you want to put risk, and then have unequal treatment to get it there. Secondly, financial liquidity needs diversity. Commonality leads to damaging volatility. Finally, the observation of risk, measuring it, seeing it, can change it. And assuming that you're the only person to respond to observing the optimal portfolio is naive at best, and in the macro level is very dangerous. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Avinash. Before I introduce the fourth panelist, I should say that straight after his contribution, I shall be throwing it open to you for both questions and comments and contributions to this debate, so I hope you're bearing that in mind. The fourth and last contributor is Thierry Van Santen, who has for the last 10 years been Executive Vice President, Corporate Risk Management of Group Danone. He spent his early career in the insurance industry, has been chairman of the French Risk Management Association, and is currently chairman of the Federation of European Risk Management Associations, which, on Mike Powell's definition, is a kind of non-association of associations of people with non-jobs. Thierry.
Thank you very much. Quite a challenging for me to conclude this panel after those three quite interesting speeches. First of all, I would like to express, obviously, my thanks to the organization for this kind invitation, and I'm more than proud to speak in front of such an audience. Thank you also to have kept the generic title, Are Risk Managers Dangerous, and not Are French Risk Managers Dangerous, which would have been a very challenging discussion for me. As you said, I am also the chairman of the FERMA with 15 countries, member of FERMA, and 5,000 members, which who are risk managers, most of them, let's say. This means that I have a pretty good position to understand what is going in this risk management community, on one side as a practitioner, on the other side with this position. And based on this, I can tell you that without any doubt, at the question, are risk manager dangerous, my answer is maybe. Why maybe and not no? Simply because it depends on what type of risk managers you are talking about and about who drives the risk management in the organization. This is why I would like to describe briefly what the risk management should be, and in the second part, what the risk management is too often. And you will see that for the first part, that the risk management is an essential tool for growth. What is risk and risk management? I have not heard about risk. I have heard about risk management until now. Thousands of people are quite often people who have no idea about what they are talking about try to give a definition about what risk management is. Risk is everywhere. When you read the press, when you hear discussion between people, when you are in your own family, you think, hear, talk about risk. You think about risk when you cross the road, when you drive, when you pour your morning tea, is it good, is it too warm? When you take a decision for your vacation, how the weather will be, shall I get value for money? One can say that any decision that you take is based on an intuitive risk analysis. Even when you come to this conference, obviously your risk is to waste 2 hours with a French guy, and the reward is maybe to get new ideas. The companies we are working for have exactly the same issue. Anything that they do is a risk-reward analysis, but with a direct or indirect economic dimension. To run a business is to take risk. In Danone, we tell to our executives, take risks, because a company which does not take risk has no future. But a company, we add that a company which ignores the risk taken is dead. In other words, what we mean by this is that the risk is a fact of life, that the more risk you take, the more reward you get. But if you take the wrong risk, you lose the game. Risk management is this: to help the organization to reach its objectives, in helping it to maximize the risk-taking process, in selecting a majority of good risk or well-managed risk against bad risk. If the sum of the good risk is far greater than the bad, you are a successful company. I like to take the image of Formula One race to illustrate what is a competition today and what is risk management in that process. In a Formula One race, like in any race, in fact, the one who wins is not the one who is driving faster. It's the one who has put in place a reliable organization, a reliable support, and who will take the best decision based on the quality of the road, on the weather forecast, regarding the tire, regarding the gas refueling, and many other parameters. Sometimes some pilots are successful during some time in taking maximum of risk to compensate insufficient strategies or weaknesses from the support. But very unfortunately, this does not work too long. This is the same for our companies. And the risk manager's job, my job, is based on 2 pillars. One is to help the organization to understand what are the good risks and where are the bad ones. Very often, it's also to help them to take some risky decision in helping them to manage them. Let's take an example. Basic risk management rule would be to have a backup production facility if one of your factory burns down. On the paper, this will mean that you should have another one ready to start again in case of fire, and that you have two factories running, or that you have two factories running at 50% of their capacity. If you do that, by the risk management book, today your company will die rapidly. The competition today is such that you must optimize at a maximum level your production capacities. My role is to help them and to push them that we must avoid backup facilities within my group, but that we must also secure the strategic locations with top-level safety requirements. The second pillar of my job is to help them to always think about risk in terms of reward and opportunity. I mean that any person in the organization must take decision in doing what we call a SWOT analysis. For those who don't know SWOT means, it's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. All of them, at any level of the organization, must think about the risk level and the reward for any decision, from the single one to a day-to-day basis, up to the strategic decision. This is a cultural issue. In other words, my job and the job of the true risk managers is to make our companies risk takers and to give them good and sound risk management solutions. But there is also a black side. That's why my answer is yes and no. There is a black side on the risk management as it is practiced widely today. This is what you see every day, or even what you feel every day. Life is full of risk. With the increase of wealth, with the worldwide communication, humans are more and more frightened with any kind of potential threat. Suspicion about food, climate change, political decision, corporation cynic attitude, illness, epidemics, and so on. This brings us to the precaution principle and the slow move to a general fear against anything new which is out of the box. This brings any kind of control, regulations, freezing of initiative, of research, and quite often very wrong decision. This brings also a lot of so-called innovative risk financing solutions, having no other reason than to refinance the wrong risk management and to have the management feeling comfortable with mistakes. This solution bringing also, by the way, new types of risk and which are today in a very bad shape with the new accounting standards. The corporations have been severely impacted by this trend, with a growing fear from the top management. This is why we have seen a significant growth of new codes, new regulation, but also significant growth of people appointed to help the companies to be risk avoider or risk hedged. Compliance. This is the key word. Are we compliant? Which means, are we following the written rules, the procedures, and the regulation? The expected answer is obviously yes. But if the only answer is yes, I can tell you that the company is at risk. I do not say that rules and regulations are not needed. I say that if you run the company in taking any decision based on a so-called good practice, you have soon two adverse effects. One is that everything which is not driven by a written rule can be done. Even the worst. A very single example is that the usual answer that you get from most of the managers in front of very dangerous situations is, but I am compliant. Compliance only is too often the ultimate goal for many top managers and for the so-called risk managers who are their representative in the field. By the way, compliance is a job of internal audit and internal control. They do a great job. But when the management misunderstands the difference between compliance and risk management and gives the management of the risk management process to the people who are managing compliance, we come to this huge risk. The second adverse effect is that the company is paralyzed in its decision-making process. The fear towards the risk is such that the other keyword is no risk. No risk means to lose step by step the entrepreneurial spirit. It means, in my previous example, to have facilities running at 50% of their capacities. It means also to stop to acquire new company or to withdraw from risky market. It means to slow down the innovation and stop launching new products. I observe that many companies who are driven by the compliance concept have, in addition to the internal audit, some so-called risk manager who spend their time to denounce new risk without any other solution that we should not do this or that, or worse, we should not do it because we cannot insure it. This risk management is dangerous for the society first, because it goes against the ultimate entrepreneurial goal, which is to take a certain number of risks in working with strong values in order to produce innovation and wealth. We might suffer long term from such an attitude, especially against the growing competition coming from emerging countries, which does not have this fear. It's also dangerous for the companies themselves because people don't deal with risk, but with codes only, and give themselves good conscience, even if they are not acting properly. Keeping in mind something very human, which is the natural trend, is to be always at the border of the rules, or even to circumvent them. I have seen quite often managers forgetting the essential to focus on the rule itself and on the way to avoid it. The next step, increasing the risk towards a dead hand, being to develop alternative risk transfer tools, reducing the expected profit to allow the refinancing of this borderline policy when it goes wrong, entering, as such, in a vicious circle. So, once again, I think that these type of risk managers are dangerous, but that the true risk management is adding value. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Jerry. Fascinating insight into risk management in a food company, which is a different kind of thing. The only point I would question is, I think you're Formula One point. I mean, it seems to me these days that the main risk in Formula One is that more than all the money you earn is taken by Bernie Eccleston. but that's not sure that risk managers can really help you with that. Now, normally when I introduce this session, I insist that people are pointed and ask questions and are precise, but that's not the rule for this debate. So it's fine to make comments. If you want to make a question to a particular member of the panel, that's fine too, but we are just as content to have contributions to the debate as questions. And what I'll do is, I've seen your hand, don't worry, just relax. At the end we'll give the four an opportunity to sum up, and then we'll have another vote. You, sir, first. The microphone will come your way.
My name is Jim Kennedy, as an octogenarian, no longer affiliated. A brief comment followed by brief question. I'll disregard the fact that the opposition, as it were, those espousing the negative cause, represent only very large entities. The rest of the comment is, I wonder if we shouldn't remember that risk should be considered in a much broader context. Namely, in recent years, I see it coming about as a result of the increasing penetration into this society of the litigious culture from the USA. Everyone seemed to want to protect their backside against suits and so on. And ironically, this culture, paradoxically, this very ultimate perversion that the Americans have made of your own Anglo-Saxon adversarial system is re-importing back into motherland this obsession with the culture of risk and blame, the abnegation of all personal responsibility. That's the end of the general remark. I just like to believe risk should be situated in that larger context. The specific question results from a point that Professor Persaud made. I think it deserves highlighting, and this is where I would ask other members of the panelists to see whether or not they agree. He pointed out that it can lead to a damaging volatility in the securities markets. To me, that is a very real consideration, especially at a time of crisis in the securities markets. I think that this can tend to exaggerate the degree of volatility beyond what one might call optimal limits. In fact, most markets have imposed daily limits now on rises and falls.
Thanks. Does anybody want to comment on that? Mike, you want to comment on that? No. The other two are not really financial markets people, and Avinash completely agrees with you. So let's take other comments. Yeah.
My name is Arif Zaman, and the question is really about Turnbull, the review of Turnbull, which is currently underway. Some people might be aware, Financial Reporting Council, I think, doing that. And my question is quite specific, and it's about reputational risk. Because what I want to ask is, reputational risk is very much a term of the moment, arguably. And yet, since that press, since the ink dried when the Turnbull Committee reported, that term has been turned on its head. I'd like to ask any members of the panel to respond to, how can risk managers, or perhaps risk directors, i.e. the board, ultimately accountable for risk, how can they begin to tackle reputational risk when you've got two things going on? The first is there's been a sea change in three areas. One is governance. Another might be expectations in terms of stakeholders. Indeed, the debate about the OFR just reinforces that question about stakeholder expectations, which stakeholders. And the third area is our perception of risk. So the whole area of risk perception has, of course, gone through a sea change as a result of both 9/11 and Enron, and at a time when I think the Nobel Prize for Economics was won by a psychologist, we also need to ask about our perception of risk. How has that changed? So how does one begin to address it when those three things have changed? And then in a more practical level, you take four companies, for example. You take two British companies, or have British in their names, certainly, BP and British Airways. Then you take two other companies, like Toyota and Pfizer, And you ask the question, how do you begin to manage or address or assess risk when you've got those things going on as well? And how do you do so when you've got clearly in those industries when there's a pace of change happening which is of a league different to perhaps it might have been for the previous generation of risk managers?
I'm going to throw that to Reg first, since he's dealt with Turnbull BP.
Yeah, well, it's just a very wide question, of course, and I think I can only shed a couple of points of light on it. I think firstly, you know, I take the view, having, I suppose, been involved in BP with members of the board in terms of the, you know, their response to Turnbull, that it, on the whole, provided, you know, a very helpful focus on the risk to which the corporation was exposed, and provided, I think, a helpful construct in terms of, you know, how to hold conversations at board level about risk when you're dealing with an enterprise, in our case, of something like 100,000 people operating in most parts of the world, involving, as I've already said, a very complex and very risky operational environment. And obviously, a board member cannot go and personally verify every aspect of our operation, so one had to develop a way of responding to that, which was fit for purpose, given their role. My views about Turnbull, on the whole, are generally positive. I think part of the issue is not so much Turnbull, but the issue of how we expect companies like BP or British Aerospace, anybody, to stand to account in society in terms of their impacts on, you know, everybody, whether it be the people who work for us, whether it be the communities through which our products pass through, and so on. And I think it is inevitable, actually, in this day and age, that large organizations like us have to have a measure of public accountability. And I think, therefore, you know, our reputation, if you like, is inevitably on the line in terms of what we do. And I don't think we should try and avoid that. I just don't think it's possible to avoid it. But I think, you know, we can act responsibly in what we do. And I think it's our duty to demonstrate that and behave accordingly in terms of the way we communicate with society. And I think that, for me, is the essence of it. That, you know, I think we try as an organization to do the right things in everything we do, and I think we expect to stand to account, and I don't think, you know, we can ever go back to a world in which somehow we could do everything covertly behind doors. And the board, frankly, is charged with the responsibility, a key part of that responsibility, in handling that interface.
Thanks. Have a nice.
People have become much more conscious about reputation risk in the past 10 years, partly because of some of the scandals we've had in corporate accounting and the problems in the banking sector in particular. And I think about the banks I've known quite well, how they've responded to this grave concern that their reputation could be slashed. And they got tough, and they increased the disclaimer on the emails. It's all about, you know, how they tick these boxes to make sure that in a crisis we've covered our arse. Now, I think what should happen is there should be far better training that these people actually understand what they're involved with and what they're doing, and that the consequences of their actions, as opposed to trying to tick the box and deal with the crisis afterwards. And I think the best way of managing risk is making sure the people in your company really are well trained at what they're doing.
Mike?
Very quickly, it'll astonish you to know that I'm actually involved in the review of Turnbull that's going on currently in a small way. Whether after this evening they'll still want my services or not, I'm not sure. But what I would say is I think regardless of Turnbull, I think the whole issue of reputational risk, which of course is very closely related to the point made earlier about the wider context of litigation, is part of the increasing inward-looking nature of organizations, neurotically concerned with the way they're seen by other parties. And that's a major distraction from their core businesses. And so I think reputational risk management as a new burgeoning sub-industry of, if I may say again, not to push the point, non-jobs, is actually responsible for amplifying some of these fears of litigation and so on. I think when companies complain about rules and regulations in the environment, I turn around to some of these people and say, actually, you're doing most of it to yourself.
Yeah, back. That's just behind the pillar.
I have a question for the gentleman who made the first presentation. What alternative would you present to replacing this bureaucratic approach to risk management?
Yeah, Mike.
Is that a question to me?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, right. I'm not here to suggest an alternative, but of course I will. I think there need to be more people like me in organizations. I would distinguish between the risk management processes, and I think I agree with a lot of what Reg Hinckley was saying about risk management processes as being core to the energy business and so on, and I don't think that's in dispute. My principal concern with addressing this motion is the emergence of a distinct class of actors who generate their own agendas in organizations. And so, therefore, my prescription is we need to roll this back in some way without throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Thank you.
Yep. So, there are four things people should do. The first one is we need risk management that is not about homogeneity and just being the same as everybody else, but reflects what the underlying sectors and risks are, more heterogeneity in risk management. Secondly, we need an understanding of interdependence, that if we observe things, it actually changes people's behavior. And so the cult of quant in risk management, which is about assuming that because I've measured risk in the past, it's static and won't change, has to change. And then the third thing is two things we should do before we do any risk management. The first thing is we should think, where do we want risk to be? Not where it might end up by accident. And then decide, how do we get risk there? How do we have the right risk management system that would encourage risk to be there and not somewhere else? And then the fourth thing, more of a regulators when thinking about risk management, is before they do any regulation, they should ask themselves, what would the regulation look like if I were captured by the big organizations and the big banks who love regulation? Because regulation is a barrier to entry into the industry and preserves the monopolies.
Thanks. Another one. Over there, I don't know how best to. You won't, given my own position, you won't take offence if I say the bald man over there.
Thank you. It's Alan Punter. I found the ground slightly cut under my question from the last answer, but I was going to. The comment I was going to make is that maybe the danger is the process, but we should defend the risk manager, the person. Arguing from a corporate view, I come from the insurance world, not the financial world, but arguing from a corporate view. Some risk managers I've spoken to recently see their role quite clearly. It's not to be killjoys. It's not to dampen downside risk. They do see their role as creating value, which was the accusation originally levelled at them. They don't create economic value. They see their role as actually returning the business to its core activities. And if I can sum it up by a risk manager at a pharmaceutical company and energy company I both spoke to recently, the way they see their role is using financial instruments and insurance instruments to help the firm create value. And the way they see that is the way a pharmaceutical company creates value is discovery of new drugs, not making existing drugs. That's an annuity. Similarly, an energy company generates value by finding new hydrocarbons, not producing the existing ones. Again, that's an annuity stream. So by using hedging, insurance, whatever risk management techniques they have available, they want to guarantee the R&D budget, and that's how they see they create value, as a risk manager, not following, admittedly, some process, COSO, or any other. So it's a comment, not a question.
Yeah, extremely interesting. I mean, that was roughly, Thierry, what you were saying.
Anyway, what I want to mention is that we are mixing risk control and risk management. That's two things which are different. More and more we have today, the emergence of the risk control just because the regulation is quite heavy and also because the top management is really scared about this new environment. The role, as once again, of the risk manager is to bring value in allowing the corporations to take more risk, to have the people understanding that the risk that they can take is probably far greater than what they are doing. So that's really our job. insurance, financial tools sometimes can back up this type of solution. But I will not say that also risk management is to try to optimize a risk-taking decision in hedging the risks.
Thank you. Next man with a beard.
Hi. Yes, I think I'm going to make my myself fairly unpopular with all of you. I was interested in all the debates, and I come very much from a trading background. I've run financial engineering in a trading room. I've run structured products in a trading room. I've been the deputy group treasurer of a very big bank. So I have the bloody T-shirt, and I also have the Porsche. And I was interested, first of all, in what Professor Mike Powell was saying, was that I think what he was taking a pop at was something I would love to take a pop at, but has actually nothing to do with risk management, and that is the vast bureaucracy that has now grown up around it, largely due to the regulator. And it's a very destructive bureaucracy because it's beginning to tell the risk managers how to manage risk. And that takes me on to a point that Avi made, I think, which I will half disagree with. I think that the point that it's not the measurement of risk that's the problem. It's really in this word risk appetite, which I came to loathe. It is the way in which regulation is pushing very major institutions to look at risk in exactly the same way, and effectively to have this strange concept of risk appetite that all happens to be the same because nobody wants to be different from the next guy. And the whole concept of risk appetite anyway is ludicrous. Nobody has an appetite for risk, and therefore whenever you discuss it in the organisation, the answer has to be zero. Of course, everybody has an appetite for return, and when you remind them that actually that's what the appetite's for and risk is simply a constraint on that, then we start to get a decent conversation. I think that's what I was interested Thierry was going, was very much down the route of what this is about is return, not risk. Risk is something you wear in the pursuit of return. And if we could move the whole concept of looking at risk back towards that, then I think we would actually have a role, we would see that risk management is not dangerous. Whereas I do feel that what is becoming is a dangerous bureaucracy around risk, which pushes us to one kind of risk view of risk appetite, one way of being in the markets, and that way is the way which is determined not by the risk managers who tend to be forward-looking, understand states of the world and all that sort of thing, but is won by people who want to justify why you have to do something. And that is intentionally a backward-looking view of risk because you can always prove that that was the mean of the distribution, that was the standard deviation of the distribution, and therefore that's the number you should have been trading on.
Thank you. I think I'm going to ask people to pick up that sort of point in the last round and take one or two because I've got a few more hands. I don't want to be biased totally in favour of beards, but another bearded man. if you could give your names and where you come from, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Robert Mankiewicz. What we've heard today are two very interesting positions. We've actually got two very good risk managers because they understand what they're talking about. The reason that most risk managers are dangerous are probably twofold. First of all, people think that once you've got a risk manager that you don't have to worry about risk, and therefore they instinctively, instead of managing their areas, pass it on to the risk manager themselves. Secondly, the point that was made about disproportionate expectations of risk managers is very similar because the managers should be individual managers should be managing their business. The risk managers should be helping them in that. Those managers must not abrogate their responsibilities. There was a wonderful quote in an FT publication about 4 years ago, which goes along the lines of, nowhere in the research for this book have we come across an enterprise further along the path to empty risk management than Enron. And that was written by an Arthur Anderson partner from Houston, Texas. So you've got an awful lot of different risk management issues there.
Thank you. Man behind back row. And then I've got somebody else in here.
Yeah. Risk management has a couple of interesting aspects of it. And stable systems usually do not have to be stabilized or is not dependent on trust. However, many comments about risk is related to that it's dangerous if the trust in the system disappears. And normally in physics, that is not necessary because it restabilizes itself. And then you have the incentive structure where managers, and not talking about organizations, where you have private gains and you socialize the losses. So you have an incentive structure going in the wrong direction that is building up leverage in the system. And building up leverage that has been constantly increasing is a little bit like piling books on top of each other. You can go on, and if you're careful, you can go on for quite a while, but sooner or later, there will be one book, and it's nothing wrong with that book or how that book is put on, but it will fall over. And then we get to the pension funds that are dependent on actuaries, and actuaries has an interesting function where you have survival of the reckless, because if you suggest too low return for a pension fund, you will not be rehired. The same thing goes for compensation consultants to top management. If they suggest too low compensation, they are out of business. So you have, as far as I can see it, a very interesting structure. And risk management then comes back to that it's more to be seen to doing something, as far as it looks to me, than actually dealing with the problems. It's a little bit like coming with a Band-Aid when the Titanic has run into the iceberg. Anyway, I might be completely wrong, and I'm very curious to be convinced that I am.
Thank you. There was another one in here, yeah.
Hi, Saul Hayden Rowe. Avinash, I'm really confused by your paradox and how you get out of it, because right now everyone is generically, let's say, using the same risk management technology and therefore pushing us into a coagulated area, so we're all looking for the same trades. If they then go and look for new areas of risk management, isn't everyone going to suddenly lemming-like go to new areas, which then become like the old areas, so you get deeper into your paradox? I mean, how do you resolve this?
Do you want to get out of that paradox now or later?
There's a fairly quick and narrow answer to that, so let me give it now, which is that the problem here is that there is often a duration mismatch between people's investment horizons and the common prevailing risk management system, which is very short-term. What's in reality, we have all kinds of natural investors who are long-term, a private equity fund, an insurance company, a pension fund. And yet, so they're long-term investment horizons, but they're using very short-term risk management systems. Not always because they've been told to by the regulator, partly because there is this great belief in doing best practice commonality. The solution is to encourage a diversity of risk management systems in relation to the diversity of investment horizons. We should have approved risk management systems for the long-term investor, for the short-term investor, for the medium-term investor, rather than have one. And that will create some heterogeneity and diversity, which should break this paradox.
Thanks. More contributions. Any from the cheap seats up the top? Yeah, somebody up there. I think you can be heard from up there, okay.
Yes, my question was more relating to the external risk, like from the risk from terrorism. How is that being integrated in the mind of the new or today's risk manager?
Reg, I guess you might be more vulnerable to this than most.
Yeah, well, I mean, we are, you know, at a point where, you know, there has been a very real shift in the context in which, you know, we operate, and frankly, in which society is operating in, and I think we are all coming to terms with that. I don't think we, you know, have a sort of nice, neat formula we can offer everyone to answer that question. But I mean, it goes back to some of the things I was saying, that, you know, being very conscious of those risks in the way you manage organizations, and being very clear about your own forms of risk management in response to those kinds of issues. I mean. You know, we have a lot of people clearly exposed to some of those risks, and we, you know, are taking, you know, a lot more care, at least in terms of the frequency of management discussions of these issues, than we had to do in the past. I fear I don't have a simple answer. It is very much a sort of quantum shift in risk in a particular dimension of our business.
I have a hand from a regulator over here.
Sorry, I was hoping to remain anonymous on that one. My name is Jeff Fitzpatrick from the Financial Services Authority. Just a quick point about, I can see a point about the diversity of risk management approaches, but how do you get there? It looks like with risk managers, you've got a whole series of micro actors without some form of overall coordination, i.e. from some form of regulatory structure. How do you move the risk management process away from this idea? And just on the point there, I mean, the question is, are risk managers dangerous? But is the absence of risk managers even more dangerous?
Well, hang on, we have a coordination problem. What's the solution to coordination problems? We need a regulator to actually do something here, intervene here. And I think that it is a real problem. I mean, when I go to institutional investors, long-term investors, they often say to me, "Yeah, I agree with you, but can we use a different risk management system on someone else's money? Because what does it look like if they get it wrong? They'd rather be wrong and in company than wrong and alone." So I think the answer here is that the regulators need to encourage and suggest, without being too prescriptive, that there are alternatives and there are approaches which take into account the long term as well as the short term. And there's been some good movement in that direction, and certainly with insurance companies. I know when Howard was there, he did make some changes with the way insurance companies value their risk over the short term and trying to increase that. And I think there's more can be done in that regard.
I'm going to give the panel a final opportunity very briefly to appeal to you for your support, but if there are any other quick points, I'll take them now before I do that. Yeah. Yeah, that's a very interesting, intriguing thought. Well, I think what we'll do now is we'll give the four panelists in reverse order a brief shot, and maybe they can pick up one or two of the points that have been made as well, and then we'll go to a final vote. So, Jerry.
Thank you. No, I think as a conclusion that we must keep in mind that risk management has always been in place in the corporations. The true risk manager is the CEO, the chairman, the CEO, the board. They are the true risk managers. Then, step by step, due to, let's say, the increase of risk, the emergence of new risks, the complexity of the risk, we have seen this need for those people to get some, let's say, support in order to be able to see what is the right direction in some ways. If I take my company, it's not the risk management itself. We are a team around the CEO with strategic planning, risk management, internal audit, internal control, legal. And all of us have a different function. And all of us have a very, counterbalancing the other. We have the people taking care of the controls. We have people taking care about what is the option in terms of strategy. And you have the people who are there to try to help the corporation to maximize the risk-taking decisions. So that's where I say when we talk about risk management, we have to take care about what we are talking about.
Thank you. Avinash?
I think there's a philosophical problem and a practical problem. The philosophical question is there such a thing as risk management which is separate? Is it the separating out of risk management from the unified quest for risk-adjusted returns that causes the problem? We try and view risk management in a separate box from the search for returns. I think it's a very important point that Brandon mentioned earlier. The practical problem is about the current practice of risk management, where the intense focus is on process rather than outcome. And the intense process of the intense focus on process is about everyone having the same process so that we know it's best practice and it's common, and that leads to all the kind of liquidity black holes we talked about. I want to finish on two points. Reg pointed out that the energy industry is one where there's a tremendous amount of risk management, and he believes that it has been very successful in the industry on risk management, which I find quite interesting because one of the biggest sources of macro risk today is the oil price. When the Indian finance minister was in town yesterday seeing Howard and others, I don't think he was here to congratulate the oil companies on so well managing the risk of oil prices. I think he was here to say he's got a real macro problem, that when he budgeted for oil it was 35 and now it's 50. So I think that micro risk management can lead to macro dangers. And the final thing I would say is that we've got to ask the risk managers, why is it that after spending so much money on risk management, having so many separated out risk managers, that and having bigger, more liquid financial markets in terms of size, we've got more volatility in our financial markets? And why is it that individuals like you, with all this risk management, are more scared about entering into equity markets and savings instruments? We've had a collapse in the public going to the market and saving using financial instruments. And I think that's a result of risk management not working. Thanks.
Thanks. Reg?
Yes, well, I don't think this time in the debate I'm going to rise to the challenge on the oil price, but I promise over drinks with anybody who cares to repeat the challenge, I will rise to it then.
Done.
I'd make sort of two sort of points here. I mean, firstly, on the risk manager per se, I'm very much with Thierry saying there is good risk management and bad risk management, and I don't think you can damn the whole of the risk management world in looking at some of the, you know, extremely adverse responses to these developments. And I'd be with all the panelists, really, in terms of concerns over undue process and over bureaucratization of risk management. But my central thesis is, of course, that there's another side to it. And the other side to it is the role that risk management has to play within corporate decision-making, within management, and this is just purely experience, I say, as a matter of experience, it's been valuable. I think the second thing, though, and I think it's the issue that probably sits underneath all of this, is not so much about risk managers, but it's about society and society's attitudes to risk. And the way we're creating institutions, the way we're creating regulation, the way we're creating pressures on individuals. I mean, in a place like the LSE, it's worth thinking about these issues in a long-term context, in looking back to the creation of limited liabilities companies, which, after all, at the end of the day, was, you know, a fairly early attempt at risk transfer, and think about the benefits that that brought. But we've come a long way in whatever number of years it is, and I think we're now at an interesting point in society where, you know, information for everyone is very freely available, and I think we have to think about the changing context for risk and our attitudes to risk in terms of that social development. Perhaps not blame the risk manager for all the ills of the world.
Mike?
Just two points to conclude. I think we should not make the mistake of getting carried away by the stories that large companies tell us of their risk management function. I don't doubt that these are well integrated into decision processes and a fundamental part of the way they do business. If we look at the macroeconomy as a whole and medium and small-sized firms, I think we get a different story. We get the rise of the increasingly timid corporation, as Benjamin Hunt has titled his recent book. organizations that are low on resources and are increasingly distracted from their core businesses by risk management processes. And in that context, that specific context, I think we can talk of risk managers and risk management as having very counterproductive effects. And the second and final point I'll conclude on is, given the number of comments that have been made from the floor, I don't doubt at all that risk managers themselves see their role as enhancing the value of the firms they work in. They just can't prove it.
Thank you. Well, look, as we conclude, I've got a couple of things I have to say. One is that it would be, we would be grateful, and the Economist would be grateful, if you could fill in the feedback forms that you have, which we'll collect at the end as you leave. I don't want to try to influence the vote from the chair, but I would just say, from my personal point of view, that one thing that I have been convinced of, particularly by Mike, is that given that there are so many doubts about whether risk management is useful or not, certainly the last thing we need at the LSE is a Centre for the Analysis of Risk and Regulation, because that is clearly likely to be a waste of time. So that's been a useful conclusion, a cost-saving idea for me. Now, I know that the blunt question, are risk managers dangerous, risks simplifying the issue to the point of meaninglessness, but that's what The Economist does every week. So we're going to do it again here, and what I want is for those of you who believe now that risk managers are dangerous to raise your hands. We had 25 before. How many have we got now? Yeah, can you count that side? Up there, only two more. How many have you got? You must have more than that. So, yeah, what's in it? Yeah, I would say must be 35 to 40 now. And those who do not believe it, well, it's pretty finely balanced now.
Oh, come on.
You may just have it.
We've
I think
still
we'll
got it. We've I think still we'll got it.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, from the first of all, on your behalf, can I thank the four panel members for coming along for extremely interesting presentations. Thank The Economist for the partnership we are having with them on this debate, which I think was very good. And also thank you, some really interesting points, I think, from the floor. And to encourage as many of you who have got half an hour to spare to come and join us for a drink in the senior dining room on the senior common room or the senior dining room, I can't remember which, but on the fifth floor anyway of the old building. Thank you.